Thank you very much for coming to this new e-seminars of the Diabetes and Obesity Working Group of the ERA, European Renal Association. If you have been following us in the last seminars, Diabetes is a working group devoted to the association between renal disease related to obesity, metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, and diabetes. And we try to cover all different aspects of renal damage in this context. You know that metabolic syndrome is a complex situation that is a risk factor for renal disease and a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, but is also associated with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So they call NAFLD or NASH or whatever you want to call it. It's a lipid deposit in the liver. And for a long time in our group, we've been with a keen interest in the association between lipid deposit in the kidney as a proxy of future fibrosis, inflammation, and renal damage. Of course, the best organ to understand what is lipotoxicity damage is the liver, because it's a clear link between lipid deposition, inflammation, fibrosis, cirrhosis, and even liver cancer. So we want to understand from the kidney perspective, is the fibrosis that is happening in the fatty liver maybe also be observed in the fatty kidney. This is why we prepare this e-seminar, and I'm very happy to introduce you, Enrique Morales, which is a member of the Diabetes Working Group and has experience in research in the field. So, Enrique.
Thank you very much for inviting me to participate in this Diabetes Working Group. I'm going to talk, my topic is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, pronounced NAFL, and chronic kidney disease, what is the link? This is my disclosures. Okay, as you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is the most common cause of chronic liver disease in the worldwide, around 25%. The general population and increase the percent in patients with metabolic syndrome and diabetes. NAFL included different types of liver damage from steatosis to hepatocellular carcinoma. NAFL is diagnosed by the presence of more than 5% fat accumulation in liver cells. But this term is changing in the last year from NAFL to muffled. This is due to the variety of metabolic comorbidities, such as hypertension, insulin resistance, diabetes, obesity. And the international experts decided to change this term, you see in this figure. As you know, the prevalence of NAFL is 20-30% of the adult population, and CKD is higher than 25% in population higher than 65 years old in the world, and both entities serve these comorbidities, hypertension, dyslipidemia, obesity, or insulin resistance. And as you know, so some studies have confirmed that the presence of NAFL increases the risk of CKD, and the degree of liver fibrosis is related to CKD stage, while other studies have found that the incidence of CKD not affected by NAFL. We need to establish the diagnosis and confirm steatosis in the liver, and we use different parameters or biomarkers, imaging tests such as ultrasonography, MRI, CT scan, or other index, the most frequent is the NAFL fibrosis score. But don't You don't know that is the liver biopsy is the gold standard diagnosis of the steatosis in the NAFL patients. But the problem is, in some occasions, it's impossible to do a liver biopsy for the condition of the patient or the situation. This is a very nice presentation of two entities, NAFL and MAFL. NAFL is necessary, as you know, the different techniques, imaging or biomarker. We need to establish the diagnosis of steatosis and exclude the secondary cause or alcohol consumption. And NAFL, as you know, that is in relationship with the overweight or no overweight, but the metabolic syndromes, and you need to establish this diagnosis, the MAFL with two metabolic risk factor, as you know, in this table. On the right, you can see that these entities is very similar, and some authors recommended to use MAFL compare with NAFL in relationship with the incidence of CKD. But what is the interconnection between NAFL and CKD? But this is the main questions. One is that the serum cardiometabolic risk factor are the basis of the association, or whether NAFL itself may independently of serum cardiometabolic risk factor contribute to CKD development, or CKD development risk dependent on the degree of liver disease in patients with NAFL. During my talk, I try to answer these questions. As you know, there's this evidence of association between NAFL and CKD in some situations is very difficult to establish a different diagnosis, NAFL and CKD. This is compare answer that different situation with cell obesity, hypertension, or protombetic states, and for this reason it's necessary to know, to talk about the different cross-sectional studies, core studies, or systematic review to know what is the influence of both entity and the incidence of CKD in NAFL patients. This is a different cross-sectional study from against the incidence of CKD in NAFL, but the majority talk about the prevalence of CKD range from 20 to 55% among patients with NAFL compared to 5 to 30% with patients without NAFL. This is a very nice study. This is with a liver biopsy to demonstrate NAS in this patient, and in this group, only 80 patients with this biopsy, the percent of albuminuria or CKD was higher in the patients with this liver biopsy. And this is a correlation between the fibrosis and the decline of GFR in these patients. More fibrosis, less GFR in this group of patients. In this study, this is a cohort of patients with CKD. In this occasion, the authors didn't show that the relation between the outcome and stone renal disease, but they found the correlation with the cardiovascular events association with NAFL in this patient. This is the percent. Around to 18% in patients with CKD, and in diabetic patients was near to 30% of the patient. The diagnosis was by ultrasound imaging. This is all older core studies with an important number of patients. It's a cross-sectional study with a lot of patients. In this occasion, the authors divided in four groups without or with a metabolic disbalance, and only the patients with a NAFL with metabolic dysfunction or fatty liver disease with a metabolic dysfunction was a correlation with the incidence of chronic kidney disease, only in these groups. In summary, these studies for constitutional studies, the existence of the association between NAFL and the increase of prevalence of CKD is robust, but is also driving force for the development and progression remains uncertain. This is only two meta-analysis studies. One of them is this. This is 11 core studies where included more than 1 million of participants. And NAFL, you can see in this slide, is associated with increased risk of incident of CKD independent of established cardiorenal risk factor. And in other meta-analysis with more patients, more observational longitudinal studies, with the authors found the same correlation between NAFL and CKD. In conclusion, these meta-analyses confirm that the NAFL with different techniques, diagnosis, or imaging, or biomarkers, was associated with nearly 40% increase in the long-term risk of incident CKD. But as you know, that this study has a limitation, that is very difficult to establish a causal association or what is the correlation with the, between fibrosis or the incidence of CKD. Now, studies use liver biopsies, a gold standard of NAFL, or the, these studies use BMI on our studies use body fat distribution or the use of calculator of GFAR. As you know, it's very difficult to establish the real GFAR in patients with obesity or cirrhosis. The majority of these studies was in Asian countries and no large prospective studies. In this margin, you can see the putative mechanisms linking NAFL with CKD. We talk about this in my presentation about the different topics. The most important is the relation, you know, that metabolic syndrome or diabetes with the NAFL, the obesity, the insulin resistance in this patient increase the risk both NAFL and CKD. I talk about the NAFL with cardiovascular and metabolic risk factor have the potential to cause a kidney dysfunction and the relation between different cells of an hepatic and then pro-inflammatory cytokines or RAS system oxidative stress, pro-inflammatory, pro-fibrotic mediators, the DUCH, the kidney, and the liver. This is a classical study that's correlation between metabolic, not healthy, obese patients. The incidence of CKD was higher than the rest of the group, no obesity or obese but healthy patients. This is the study was very important to different phenotypes of patients in relation with the CKD and obesity patients. This is a study of our group about what is the incidence of NAFL and what is the risk factor of NAFL in patients with diabetes. In this occasion, you can see this is 100 patients. This is the baseline characteristics of this patient, patients with diabetic and chronic kidney diseases. And we divide it in three groups depending on the NAFL score and imaging with ultrasonography. And we divide it depending on the grade of fibrosis in this patient. You can see in this group, there's a higher fibrosis. The patient with less GFAR and increase of proteinuria and the baseline of this group. Remember that this study, the follow-up of this study was 7 years. What's the evolution of this group? We tried to treat the proteinuria and at the end of the study was very similar in three groups. But the problem was the GFAR of this patient. The final GFAR was less in the group with high fibrosis compared with two groups. This is a very important point because we use the same drugs, the same RAS inhibitors, also SGLT2 inhibitors in this group of patients, and was independent of the grade of fibrosis. Fibrosis was the risk factor, the only risk factor to loss GFR higher than 50% in this group of patients. And you can see the difference between a group of fibrosis and compared with the two groups. And the degree of hepatic fibrosis was a correlation, a positive correlation with the progression of CKD. For this reason, we recommended in this group of diabetic patients use the global evaluation and use the liver test and the imaging of the liver to know what is the risk factor for the renal progression in this patient. Other point is the change of diet in our world. You know that it's changing from glucosa to fructosa. This is a classical study of Richard Johnson, and the effects, the adverse benefits of the fructose in different organs, such as liver or the kidney, what is a chronic kidney disease, and relationship with the uric acid, what in relation with the inflammation or fibrosis, endothelial or in the kidney damage. Other point is the relation with the dysbiosis or the perturbation of the gut microbiota. This is a different balance of different bacteria or increase or decrease in patients with NAFL and the influence of the progression of NAFL and CKD. This is a very important point. This is the crosstalk relationship between gut, kidney, and liver. And relation with the damage in the different organs. This dysbiosis contributes to the development of NAFL and CKD and generated pro-inflammatory toxins, bile acid, or other toxins that, as you know, that finally develop the chronic inflammation in the liver and the kidney. Other point is the relation with the oxidative stress and the kidney dysfunction and the decrease of clotal protein in this group of patients, and the role of platelets are activated and the defects of pro-inflammatory cytokines, chemokines, and growth factor influence of the damage of the liver and the renal diseases. Finally, the old age is a risk factor for NAFL, CKD, and type 2 diabetes, and decrease, in the slide before, I can talk about the urinary clotal proteins is decreased in this patient, and this is the relation with the endothelial and the relation with two glucoproteins that is important roles in the influence of the liver and the kidney. This is fetuin A and adiponectin. Fetuin A is a glycoprotein produced by the liver, and in human, higher fetuin A level associated with obesity and insulin resistance. On the other side of the balance, we can see the adiponectin. Adiponectin mediates crosstalk between adipose, kidney, and liver, and improves insulin sensitive, and there is a receptor of adiponectin in the podocyte of the kidney, and this is the balance of increase of fetuin, a decrease of adiponectin in the influence of the podocyte, and so with the renal damage, with the proteinuria, and finally chronic kidney diseases. And finally, what is the effect of different genetic polymorphins, such as PNP, LA3. This is most important. There are other genes influenced in the NAFL and CKD. PNP, LA3 gene has been recognized as a major common genetic variant associated with a greater predisposition to NAS. And this gene is highly expressed in liver, but in the kidney. Finally, we need to establish the diagnosis in our patients, and it's very important to recognize the kidney function test in patients with an NAFL. This is a matches to send to a pathologist, and it's necessary to determine the renal parameters, serum creatinine, GFR, albuminuria, and know what is the renal function. And the patient with CKD is necessary to know what is the liver function test and what is the liver ultrasound to know the, what is the person of NAFL in the patients with CKD. But what is the therapeutic options in both entities? This is the way, the normal way, that the patient with the normal NAS and fibrosis and cirrhosis in the patients, and the different alternative approach about the treatment in this group of patients. In the next slide, you can see the different situation, the lifestyle modification, weight loss with the diet or the bariatric surgery, is a new treatment in patients with diabetes or not diabetes. This is a nice study because the author saw it that the decrease of the weight decreased the fibrosis of the patients with NAFL, an increase of GFR in correlation, in this correlation, a positive correlation with a decrease of fibrosis and increase of GFR only with a lifestyle modification independently associated in the improved kidney function. This is a study of our group, of diabetes group, with a patient with CKD and obese patient undergoing to the bariatric surgery and with a follow-up during 24 months. We want to know what happened with the renal parameters and the other parameters, cytokines, adipocyte cytokines, or inflammatory parameters. You can see in this slide the weight loss, decrease of the fat of this patient, and this decrease of fat was a positive correlation with the real GFR, determined with the EOXOL, and decrease of proteinuria in this group of obese patients after bariatric surgery. But bariatric surgery induced changes in the adipose tissue secretion pattern. You can see the decrease of leptin, bisphosphatin, and increase of adiponectin in this patient. And we can find the reduction of fibrosis values in this group of patients in the baseline and after of bariatric surgery. So we can demonstrate that not only changes in the cytokines, but is possible in the inflammatory parameters, the pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory parameters was a decrease of this inflammation in this group of patients. Finally, I can talk about two new drugs during the last years, GLP-1 receptor agonists or SGLT2 inhibitors. This is a very nice review of our group. And as you know, during the last year, we have received a lot of information about the cardio and nephroprotector effects of different SGLT2 inhibitors, such as in this study, the reduction of mortality, reduction of nephro events or cardio events. But what is the influence of these drugs in the NAFL? You can see in this slide the influence of the decrease of hyperglycemia, uric acid, oxidative stress, inflammation, and increase of adiponectin, and this is the influence of the NAFL in this group of patients. The other drugs is GLP-1 receptor agonist. This is the other drug that influence of the benefits on the renal effects or cardionephroprotective mechanisms of GLP-1 receptor agonist with the weight loss or improve left ventricular, improve microbiome, or direct effects, decrease oxidative stress, or reduce the renal hypoxia and glomerular atherosclerosis. This is the new trials to design to treat the novel in patients with CKD. It's possible in the future years to find a new results of new drugs in these entities. Finally, this is my take-home message. This is my conclusion. As you know, recent studies have suggested that novel is associated with increased risk of CKD, but we need more evidence in this group. I think it's better to talk about novel rather than novel in this group of patients with the correlation with the metabolic syndrome or obesity. There are a lot of mechanisms of the pathogenesis, inflammatory, oxidative stress, activation of RAS inhibitors, metabolic syndromes. The NAFL should be a screening for CKD in patients. Don't forget, a screen of NAFL in patients with CKD, and CKD meat also have NAFL. And finally, weight loss, GLP-1, SLT2 inhibitors maybe benefit both liver and the kidney in individuals with MAFL and CKD, and we need to work together in multidisciplinary teams, the pathologists, internal medicines, nephrologists, endocrinologists, to treat these entities. Thank you for your attention, and I'm sorry about my problems with my connection. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your nice presentation. With very relevant information about it. And I would like to go back to one of the key questions. It is a key question, whether these shared risk factors or NAFLD independently actually are the basis for the association with CKD. And because even though there is actually convincing evidence, we're not sure yet. And one of your take-home messages was actually as well that NAFLD should be screened for, in patients with NAFLD, we should screen for CKD. But how about the other way around? You mentioned it shortly, but do you think that we should screen for NAFLD in patients with established CKD? What do you think?
That's a very good question, but At first, I didn't know if it is possible to do the diagnosis of NAFL in patients with established CKD. But after our work with diabetic patients, I think this is a close relationship between diabetes or metabolic syndrome and fatty liver disease. And it's possible to do an echography or ultrasonography in this kind of patients to establish if these patients have or not have NAFL in this group of patients. Because you treat the proteinuria, you treat the glucose, but it's possible to need to multi-target treatment in this group of patients. Because at the end of our study, you can find that the same proteinuria in patients with diabetic, only the risk factor that we can find was the fibrosis in this group. Now we are looking for in patients with bariatric surgery and the liver histology, in this group of patients, and we want to know what happened with the kidney function long time ago. Possible in the future, but I think it's cheap to do an ultrasonography in this group of patients and know what is the liver function in this patient.
Yes, I think you're right, in some way, maybe it should be only in patients with type 2 diabetes and CKD, so you just narrow it for this patient group. Then it's just to figure out how to screen for it, right? Because normal liver enzymes might be normal even though you actually have NASH or other parts of the spectrum.
Yeah, I agree with you that in your work was very difficult to establish what is more incidence in the patients with CKD or no with an NAFLD. But probably in the group, if I think it's probably we need to establish this diagnosis in diabetic population. Probably
with CKD.
Because in this group the NAFLD is higher than the rest of the group and it's possible to know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a question also.
Yeah.
Wait for the participants to write the questions. Because I found very interesting the data you showed. My view when we analyze other studies is that you can have a lot of fat in the liver, but zero fibrosis and zero inflammation. And this is expected in the vast majority of the patients. So it's just a small subgroup of people with fat. And this is what I like from your study, that those with fibrosis, with chronicity, are those in which you expect to have also fibrosis in other organs, possibly associated to the same cause that cause fibrosis in the liver. So, because if not, there are studies. When I remember studies saying, well, now lipid deposit is a risk factor, but lipid deposit is not simple. It's just more, you need to go for the worst conditions, I think. The worst, more inflammation and more fibrosis. I think it was clear in your presentation that issue.
Yes. I think it's, we only find these results in the group of high fibrosis, not in the rest of the groups. Probably in the NAS group, it's very difficult to find these results. Probably, I think it's the relationship with the incidence of CKD only we can find in the group of fibrosis, the high fibrosis, no in the less fibrosis or steatosis. Probably we need to have more damage in the liver to find the CKD and the worst evolution of CKD in this group of patients. I agree with you. Yeah.
I would ask to you if you wish say is there a difference in association between proteinuric versus non-proteinuric CKD in these patients? I assume.
Yeah, but I think this question is. It's better for you, Esteban, than for me, because you are an expert in patients with diabetes with or without proteinuria. We talk about this in other occasions. We think the proteinuria, not only the biomarker of damage, of renal damage in the patients with diabetes or NAFLD, we think we need to see other compartments in the kidney with the vascular effects of this patient. Probably the majority of studies in relationship with the proteinuria, but we know that we have patients with diabetic and this kind of patient progression of CKD without proteinuria. Because the damage is in other sites, not only in the glomerular or the podocytes. We need, but I'm sure that you have more explanation about this question.
Well, no, I agree with you. What I think is that this, if there is a kind of progression towards end-stage renal disease in these people or to advanced renal disease, as you found, is not that necessarily is due to glomerular damage, possibly, and they not have, unless they are extremely severe people.
Yeah.
They may have just very, very mild or just albuminuria. And possibly, if you need to exclude also the patients with diabetes, because diabetes may also induce proteinuria in different ways of fatty liver. So I think if it is, it is clearly an example of non-proteinuric way of going to because it's one of severe manifestation of metabolic syndrome.
Yes, and you know that the main cause of death in this group of patients is cardiovascular event.
Exactly.
I think it's answered that the vascular damage is most important that we know. No?
Exactly. The other question is, what is the incidence of CKD in non-alcoholic liver disease not associated with diabetes and obesity?
This is a very difficult question, but I try to solve in the different studies. The problem is, what is the diagnosis that they do in your study? Because, for example, people use ultrasonography, other people use FibroScan, other people use NAFL score. These different possibilities establish different diagnoses of NAFL in this population. But we know that in obesity, patients with obesity and NAFL have a very high percent of prevalence of CKD, and in patients with diabetes, the prevalence is higher than this group. But the rest of group, is possible that the study of Adrian is 50% patient without diabetes or without obesity.
Okay, great.
But in other studies, I found some studies that the prevalence of CKD patients with NAFL raised to 90% of the patients. So it's
Then is there any gender effect, gender differences?
Yes. I think it's probably the effect of estrogens in these groups. Is different, but I think it's after my review I have some doubt the relationship between both entities, because it's very difficult to establish the diagnosis of the incidence of CKD in this group, because both entities share the same comorbidities, and it's very difficult to say what is most important, the obesity to NAFL or to CKD. What is most important, insulin resistance in NAFL and CKD. But I think finally my conclusion is we need to explore this way, and it's impossible in the future to find some results. But it's necessary to prospective studies to establish the incidence and the prevalence of the CKD in this group. Yeah. We need to work with the pathologists in this.
Yeah. May I just add, I don't have the numbers either, as you don't know, the numbers for the incidence of CKD, but there are several studies in this meta-analysis that shows that in a patient group with NAFLD, there's a 1.45-fold increase of incident CKD if you compare this patient's group with patients without NAFLD.
Yeah.
So, and these are, if I remember correct, adjusted for this diabetes and obesity. So if you have that in mind, it's a 45% increase of developing CKD if you have NAFLD compared with not.
Yes, the image with the NAFL and CKD is the similar with the egg and the chicken.
Yes.
What is the first?
Yeah.
NAFL or the CKD or the comorbidities? Sometimes it's very difficult to separate these things.
It is very difficult.
Yeah.
Are there more questions?
I have a question for Adrian.
Yeah.
For your study of NDD, do you consider in this population the because you use CT scan, no?
Yes.
For the diagnosis, is possible to use other techniques for imagining fever scan all there to confirm this diagnosis? Or do you think that CT scan is the best option to diagnosis of NAFLD in these patients?
I'm very happy for that question because it's not the short answer is no. CT is not the best method. It's good if you want to say something about more fat, moderate to severe hepatic steatosis, but you can't draw any conclusions about mild steatosis when using CT. So we actually right now we've done another study. Tried to confirm this, and we did using MRI instead, and MR spectroscopy, which is considered gold standard imaging method, just to see if it is the same. And just shortly said, we found no difference between patients with CKD compared with those without. So we believe, after these two studies, that when you talk about steatosis, we can't find any association between the steatosis part of the NAFLD spectrum with CKD. So, as you also mentioned during your presentation, and Esteban named it too, we think it's more about fibrosis and the more severe stages of NASH when we want to find the link between these organs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have two alternatives in the treatment now, but I only mentioned they very quickly, but it's SLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 receptor agonists, because it's very important to treat these patients in both entities with the liver and the CKD. And I think it's a very good combination of this treatment in this group of patients. And I think in the future it's possible to do some studies in this way to know what is the effects of these drugs in this group of patients. But I think it's very interesting because it's liver protection, nephroprotection, and cardio protection.
Yes. And you use it. Well, it's you might use it. One might say it off-label, but if a patient has diabetes, it's totally all fine to give semaglutide, for example, and it will help for the weight reduction, which is the only way to treat these NAFLD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are also studies with exercise.
Yes, the medical treatment, exercise and weight reduction, lifestyle interventions. True.
I mean, that is just a kind of specific type of therapeutic exercise, just designed specifically to this type of diseases, and you can see many changes. One of the things that's very nice is that we still lack a good definition of how to identify without a biopsy the patient with fibrosis and inflammation. And this fibrosis can be usable, but if the patient is very fat, that is also quite frequent in this population, you can have problems. And then as a nephrologist, you think how lucky they are of having a fibrosis scan, and why don't we apply that to the kidney? But then you see, you can apply that in the transplanted kidney. There are some studies trying to associate the fibroscan in the transplanted kidney and the biopsy you usually do in some conditions. So it will be interesting to see if in the future we have a technique to measure the degree of fibrosis in the kidney without doing a biopsy or same, because there are some studies on that and possibly maybe of hope in the future.
Sure, because all these biomarkers, you mentioned some of them, Enrique, as well, the fibrosis 4 and NAFLD fibrosis score, which you used as well. They are difficult. I think they're difficult to interpret due to how the scores is what's involved in the score. You have the age, for example. So if you have an old patient population, the score will automatically just be in high. You have to adjust for that afterwards. So these are it's just one factor you just have to have in mention when you look at the score for your patient.
Yeah,
that's true too. Yeah. Also, we lack we're always forgetting the urine, and we are oncologists. So are these, if they are affecting the kidney, these inflammatory biomarkers are also affecting the liver and then the kidney. Are we able to measure them in the urine? Because it will help to find some lipid. I don't know. You need to do lipidomics. The urine and some other specific studies on inflammatory markers in the urine, but also these studies are a bit have some flaws.
For example, it's incredible. We have in a study with the pathologists with the liver biopsy in patients with obesity, morbidity obesity in bariatric surgery. This kind of patient during the follow-up, nobody have an albuminuria during the follow-up of these patients.
Exactly.
It's incredible because you have the other parameters, but no urine. And it's a simple test to have a lot of information about what is the kidney damage in this group of patients.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Just remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the message for the pathologists because it's easy to do a urine test in this group of patients.
Oh, thank you very much, Enrique, for this nice overview of a problem we as nephrologists are starting to study, and thank you very much to my colleague Teresa Adrián from Copenhagen to co-chair this conference.